Because the methodology is simply nothing more than the dynamics of incremental velocity. The relationship of the increments of a race, which are threefold. First, which is called the first call, the second call, the final call of a race, which are put in the racing form. Understanding those three calls of a race is amazingly difficult for those who don't want to understand them. The second call is a half mile in a sprint and three quarters of a mile in a route. Any questions that arise from this, don't be embarrassed to pipe up for explanation. Jimmy Bradshaw and I did a seminar in Fort Smith, Arkansas. For 300, it was free, so there were 300-400 people there. Price was right. It was to celebrate the opening of parimutuel betting in the state of Oklahoma at that magnificent outdoor bank known as Blue Ribbon Down. We drew a crowd. Jimmy and I, talking to these people who really seriously were going to be devotees of the races, were hoping to make some money in the process, and I got up there with this great introduction. And I started talking about the hidden fractions. The hidden fractions in a race, which if you just know those, if you don't understand anything else about handicapping or this methodology, if you only understand the importance of the hidden fractions, the ones that are not openly obvious in the racing form, they being the second fraction, which is that interval between the first call and the second call, is the second fraction. The interval between the second call and the final time is the third fraction, right? And I'm talking about the hidden fractions. I'm showing people how to get it. One fellow puts up his hand and says, "Never mind them hidden ones, how'd you get the others?" You knew you were in trouble, didn't you? So we had a naked racing form out. We said, "See that first thing up there where it says 3x1 or 3x2 or whatever? That's the first call. And you see where it says the second one, that's the second call. Where it's that final time that you used to see all the time where it says 1.11.2, that's the third call. The ones in between, how do you get those? Well, you get this one by subtracting this from this one. And adjusting for length, beating their game. Gaining, how do you do that? Well, that started. This is 4 hours now, and we. But it paid off. Once they understood the hidden fractions, people, they didn't buy anything because we weren't selling anything. But they walk up to Jimmy now and they say, "Hey, I understand the hidden fractions. I'm doing pretty good." If you learn nothing else in life and you understood the meaning of the hidden fraction, the second fraction and the third fraction, and the relationship to the reality of a race, you've got more than 99.9% of the public has. Does anybody have any question in their mind about the discernment of those hidden fractions? Yes, sir.
Only one, that's at Belmont, that's only for the mile and 3/8, mile and a half. What do you do with them?
Let me tell you about handicapping races over a mile and 3/16. You can handicap them, but you must not use pace lines from races of that distance. Why? Because they are not reflective of the horse's pace personality. They are strategy races. You have to find out. When we handicap, for instance, the Kentucky Derby, which is Kentucky Derby is not a good example, but anything over anything in a mile and 3/8.
The Belmont's
a very good example. And you want to make concepts of how to do it, and you're taking your horse out of a longer race, you merely find a common distance to handicap them from. The common distance of a mile and 1/8 or a mile and 1/16, or where you can find them, it's not as good as a mile and 3/16.
But if Belmont horse is running a mile and 3/8 on the turf, and you look back, and you only got like a mile or a mile and 1/16 on the turf.
That's fine.
It doesn't work. You've
got to
look at mile and 1/4, mile and 3/8
races. In our Chicago running, we show people how to do that by hand, by extrapolating the fractions by hand to see what it did at those. But when that's all you've got, you do it by hand.
There's too many of them.
The reason we don't have it in the... Yeah, we'll forget them.
Take them off the mile.
There's too many to forget.
Yeah. You've got to pass those races.
There's too many to pass.
My place there every day.
Well, There's another.
Yeah. Sure.
In those mile and 3/8 races, that's
great. Mile and quarter.
Fine. Either one of those, you'll get a you'll get a half mile time, and you'll get the mile time. You want to do a little leg work? Go back to the results chart and find out what that is. What that the 3 furlong, the 6 furlong time was.
And
make it a mile race. If you don't have another pace line. But what Howard is saying is if you've got another pace line nine and a half furlongs or less, that's representative of the horse, use it. And if you've got too many horses, like look at the Alan Hughes race the other day, right here at Saratoga. No way you can get a pace line on that horse that's 9.5 furlongs or less. They're all mile and 3/8, mile and a quarter, or, God forbid, some Hialeah races which had no internal fractions at all. If you want to play into that situation, you're in very dangerous ground. And I would suggest, if you got a horse or two like that in the race, just turn the page and go to the next
race. I can tell you a story about that particular race. I wanted to play the race, and the only horse that played the race was Al Muse. So I rated Festivity, I rated Edgewater, and I rated Syntonic. And those three horses came up, and I said, well, I can play this race and put Al Moons in the exotic, or I can just forget about it, or I can play a couple of dollars on the horses that look good, which is what I did. I paid $4 on Festivity and $4 on Syntonic, I think. Al Moons won the race and was disqualified, and Festivity paid $49.50, and Syntonic was the third horse. So the only thing I can say is don't play those races in the full bank. You want to play them? Play them as an actual race, but they're very hard to beat. You can't get a line on the horse.
Generally speaking, that's your answer. If you cannot get a, that's the only reason we don't play maidens with first time starters. Not because they're not beatable races, but merely
sometimes they only play one or two races.
They run again tomorrow.
You're both.
Maidens
and then mile and a
quarter
on the turf.
Don't go. That you can go to Wall Street on certain days and you can find you cannot make a good investment in the stock market. The point is, if I really thought that the races of over a mile and 3/16 could be handicapped with pace, then I'd say we'll put in a different algorithm in the computer and you can handicap. But our experience has been that trying to handicap races from horses from longer distances does not profit you. You can do them by hand. You can find out their figures, but when finding out their figures is it predictive is negative. There are other ways, in other words. But generally speaking, you're still going to get 20 plays a week at Belmont, even though you counter a few of those, even though you may think that that's dominating the picture in that day.
Go to Monmouth, yeah.
But that is a problem which, if you face it, you encounter it by doing it by hand, which is why everybody has a hand supplement. Knowing the distance. Getting back to the rudiments there, that is the reason we don't use a computer. But let me tell you something, what you can do, this will kill you. We have guys who play races at greater distances and they don't realize that the algorithms of the computers are not designed for those, but they will put in the second call of those races. They'll give these hodgepodge of numbers, but they will be relative.
Energy 98.
Yeah, but they'll still be relative. Yeah, they'll still be relative. Amazingly enough, I have a man who won the Kentucky every 3 years in a row. Never figure out how to enter the numbers in his computer, but he keeps winning, so I didn't tell him he was doing it wrong. He's getting minus 92 and 128, but he was getting the horses, his sort was getting the horses in proper order. Why tell a man like that he's not doing it right? He's winning. So his numbers are different from anybody else. He doesn't care. The only numbers he's counting is the ones on the bills he gets from the cashier. It's relative. Anything you put in is relative. Even when you put them in. Yeah, there is one in the manual that Michael will go over and discuss in detail how to handicap. Instead of looking at these vertical things first, we merely take the race and space it out horizontally. We are looking at the first fraction thusly. The second fraction thusly, and the third fraction this way. To get an index, this is background for those of you who have been doing it for a long time, and for those of you who are new, this is merely what we are doing. We are looking at the pace of the race. Now, does everyone understand that the pace of the race represents the times of the horse that was in the lead when he hit the camera, the photo camera, at each call? That is not the winner's times unless the winner went wire to wire. Does anybody have any question on that? Those times you see in the racing form represent the horse who first broke the camera plane at each call. That is the pace of the race. So let's say the pace of the race was 22, 45, and 110. What we're now doing is translating that with Jimmy's help on a hand calculator. We're translating the pace of that race into feet per second. So we're saying that 45 seconds, 65 for 22, and 60 from 23 seconds is the second fraction. 22 from 45, 57, 39? 37, 39. And this I know is 52.8. 25 seconds. That is the pace of the race, of that particular race. That could have been shared by three different horses. Does anybody not fail to see where that could be shared by three different horses? One horse could have been in the lead here and earned the 60. He could have been overtaken by another horse who broke the camera plane here and ran it 23 and did a 57.39. A third horse could have overtaken that leader and run the final fraction in 25 for the 52.80. What we are concerned about overall is not just the velocity of how the horse ran, but how the horse ran in relationship to the pace of the race. Let us say that he was beaten two lengths at the first call. We don't say that is 22-2, as the conventional handicapper does. By saying it's 22-2, we have lost one of our great edges, one of our great advantages. We say, generically, that there's 10 feet to a length, although we have altered that under certain circumstances. But let's be generic now for the basis. Those are just getting started. We say a length is 10 feet, therefore he was 20 feet behind the leader, right? Which is what? There's 20. 50. No, minus 2 lengths. It's 2 lengths off. 13, 59.09. You got him 59.09. That's what our horse did against the first fraction of the race. Now, this horse may not be around at the finish, but it's very important that the pace of that race in the first fraction was 60. Start right there. Jimmy Bradshaw tells you, hey, I look at that first fraction. Why? Because that's the horse setting the pace of the race. Whether he's around at the end is immaterial to me. I want to know what my horse, the contenders in this race, have to run against today. Now, your trainers can tell you this. The ones who use the program tell you this. Bob Purdy just sold a computer with the pace of the race, pace of the horse program into a syndicate of owners who used it to find out that their horse couldn't possibly win last week because their horse had never won a race when it had to face a 60 foot per second first fraction. Quite simply, this tells you what a horse can and cannot do. This is how your friend Oscar Barrera wins races, not with monkeys. Precisely how he wins races. We've got example after example, several manuals on Oscar Barrera's races. In every case, Oscar Barrera finds a pace that his horse can win against. And he finds the position. Why do you think he scratches so many at the gate, practically, waits for an opportunity? He is a masterful, whether he's using this or not, or whether he does it intuitively as secondary, he does it. He finds a pace against which his horse can win. The trainer who says, my horse, I've had him for 16 tries, and he's never won against a 60, I'm going to enter in a race, but he's running against a 59 first fraction, then he's got a chance. Now let's look at our mythical horse who was 2 lengths behind here. Let's say he gains a length and a half. He gains 15 feet in that second fraction. So it's 1,320 feet plus 15 feet. What was his second fraction?
58.04.
You see, here is where the beauty of that second fraction comes. That horse gained on the pace of the race. He made a move in the second fraction. Now, he's still a half length off the pace at the second call, which is the public saying, oh, look, the horse, he's two lengths off, he's a half length off. They don't realize that he's not a half length off, he's just gained a length and a half. He's gained on the pace of the race. Now, all he has to do is gain another half length, and he's 52, what, 90 here? What you're looking at there is a great Belmont win pattern. He may not have won that race. He may have still lost by something. What you're looking at is a horse who does not try to make the early lead at Belmont, which can be disastrous unless it's a slower lead. But he starts gaining in the fraction the public never sees, which is the second fraction. The second call still puts him behind. He has gained here a substantial, significant gain in the second fraction, and he maintains it to the end. Contrary, why? Are there any questions on that? Why the second fraction is so important, and why looking at a race spread out like that is so important, fraction by fraction? If this horse cannot win against the 62nd fraction, first fraction, but he always is a gainer here, Oscar Barrera, or any good trainer, looks for a situation where the horse is running against a 59-40 horse here. Sir?
I only have one question, and that is, the pace the horse runs at Belmont, and he's trying to transpose it to Saratoga. Is he going to run the same percentage or whatever as he runs at Belmont at Saratoga? And that's my difficulty.
Michael's going to specifically take you through the absolute energy qualifications of Belmont, Aqueduct, and Saratoga, as we'll refer, on since specificity.
Well, but I mean, there's different tracks. Do they
keep
the same, or do they...
They don't. The figures will not be the same, but the pattern will be the same. You see, an early leader at Aqueduct may also be a leader at Belmont, but he's going to have to slow down considerably if he wants to hold on to the lead. But the horses will deviate. Now, this is what Wayne Lucas said, and because he said it, it carries more weight than my saying it, even though we've been saying it for years. Wayne Lucas said, he said it at the Preakness broadcast, that horses have very well-defined running styles, which we call personalities. And he says there is only so much that a trainer, no matter how good he is, or a jockey, no matter how skilled he is, can do to alter that running style or that personality of that horse. That is pretty much our job to really capitalize on the style of the horse. So generally speaking, within certain parameters, and the most important word for us to digest is the word parameters. A fellow says, you tell me he was 52% early, and the horses that were 51-83 were winning all the races. We're not looking for specificity. You're not going to find a human being, unless he's an actor on the stage who's rehearsed his lines and his movements, is not going to do the same thing exactly over and over again, but it's going to be within certain parameters. And our job is to use our PAR generator program to determine parameters above which they won't go or below which they won't go, and be able to win enough percentage of using that to make it rewarding. What we're looking at is the relationship here of the horse to the pace of the race he runs against. We look again on this for the pace line we have selected, but as we are beginners, as you will do, you will use this perhaps to take a whole history of a horse, to get the feel of how a horse runs, to visualize something you never visualized before. Those of you who look at, we have a thing called Cumplianos, a little horse called Cumplianos in the Yellow Man. You know, we did a whole profile on this horse, case study of this horse, his life. You want to look at when the horse did well. That is within five lengths. If he did badly, you're not going to learn much about his pace profile, except always look at the race before a good race to see what the area of improvement was. Almost invariably, you will find that the improvement is marked in one of these three fractions. The one that the public always sees, and this is the one that's highly publicized, is a horse who flashes early speed, I think is the great conventional saying. Well, everybody's brother knows how to see that. The second one they looked for is a horse that closed well or showed a closing spur. What they don't look at is where the horse starts to gain here. So always pay attention to that second fraction. Watch where a horse improves. Watch his cycle. If you get that rhythmic cycle, what a horse is going to do, you can pretty well determine when he's ready to do it again. We have some elderly people using the methodology in trailer homes and retirement homes and things like that. Three or four of them will get together and they'll take a group of horses, 20 or 30, depending on what they can digest, and they'll keep a profile on them. And they'll say, Elmer, today that horse looks like he's about ready to do what he did 4 months ago. And one of them will go to the track, make the bets, and they make a tiny little sum, only betting their stable. Something about calling that horse your own by making a stable, a mythical stable, pretending like you own it, makes people more aware of what that horse has done and is about to do. This is the greatest weapon in the world. Bob Purdy will tell you that. I'm sure he will when it's time. Pace of the race, pace of the horse. Bob Purdy so sold on it, he was able to dump the computer for about twice what it was worth to a stable of ones that owned the real horses, just for that program. You didn't know they could get it for $29.95 in a $140 Commodore 64. He sold them a $9,000 idea. So, but they thought it was worth it because they called him the other day and said, boy, it looks like a horse can't do better than run four. And what do you run fifth?
Yeah, let me tell a story now. Please. The guy's he's brilliant. He's a neighbor of mine. He owns a bunch of horses in the syndicate. And he's not much of a handicapper at all. They just have some money and they like horses and all that kind of stuff. He's new in the method. And all he does is know how to follow exactly what the method does, what the numbers tell him to do. So he figured the race. He took his horses. The horse is coming off a layoff. He took the horse's very best race, knowing that he can't possibly run that today, but to match him up against the competition. The best he could finish was fourth in the field, running his best race. The trainer told me he thought he was going to run his best race. His horse finished last. But anyway, he had a shipper from a minor track in Northern California, and using our program and the adjustment, just doing it the way it says to be done, the horse came out on top. And he thought it looked too good because it was ones in every category. So went back and he gave him a bigger penalty than he's supposed to. Still came up on top. Went back and he did it again. And he penalized the horse about a lot more than the horse should have been penalized. And then went to bet. He bet against his own horse. The horse won, paid $12.80, and broke the track record. And the guy called me. He says, I wasn't sure if I did the right thing or not. But like you said, bet the numbers. Don't try and analyze what's going on. Just do what the manual says. So he's very pleased about it, and they're looking forward to doing it. They're going to use the program, the pace of the horse, pace of the race, to place their horses competitively, because they do want to win. That's the reason they own the horses.
So every trainer that we have, but we think they don't know all these things mystically, use this program for the placement of horses exclusively. They know that if a horse is going to run against fraction X here, here, and here, that he never has done well against that, he probably hasn't a good chance. Those trainers tell me what a wonderful advantage all of you have. Because if you have a horse and he's running against that and he can't win, you can scratch it, meaning you don't bet on it. He can't, after a certain point, the trainer cannot scratch his horse. It's because he hasn't got a chance. He has to let him run. You can tell what a horse can do against the competition he's facing. Condition books come out late. They're incomplete. Trainers don't have a complete picture of the race unless it's a stakes race or a very high-class allowance race, which the field's been selected considerably beforehand. You can tell after the last second whether or not your horse, your contenders, have a chance against the pace of the race they're facing. That is what Jimmy will dwell on later when he gets a session on matchups. If you learn to see what the matchup is, if you know what your horse is facing today and can properly assess that matchup, then you will never have any problem getting it down to... Well, you'll have a problem getting it up to five contenders. We use five contenders because we are very hip on finding the place horse. Because Exactus and Quinella's make you more money per dollar spent than anything else. So if we were only looking for winners, Jimmy wouldn't have much to talk about. He'd say, shoot, anybody can figure that winner. But the real challenge is defining the placement. And we'll go into that in great detail. But any of you who are new, who don't have the manual, you see the importance of this visualization of the pace of the horse and the pace of the race. And doing it over several races and seeing what the horse's style is. Once you learn about the horse's running style, once you learn to accept what we've said for years and what Wayne Lucas said and what, thanks to Dick Quigley's sharp eye, Woody Stevens said in a recent interview with Racing Form, very much the same thing. That you know where to, if you know where to put a horse, this is why he wins the Belmont every year. If you know precisely where to put a horse against the pace of the race that that horse is going to face, you know, those big stakes races, they know precisely what it is. You can just about pick and choose your spots to get a winner. And Woody is a master of that. Our friend Charlie Whittingham, Bob's drinking buddy, he's kind of aware of it, but Charlie has a little prejudice in life. He says, I'm aware of it.
Charlie is an ex-Marine, and he does have a killer instinct.
He says, what the hell can I do about it? You give him a size 3 hatch, which he refers to jockeys, and you tell him to do this, and tell him that, and he goes, and Charlie uses every other word as kind of a cuss word. You can't repeat him, per se. But he has difficulty in finding a jockey who will carry out his strategy. And you know, whereas Shoemaker was a hero in the Derby, he was a bum in the next two races. Charlie would be the first one to tell you that. But at any rate, the horses have personalities. You can only alter them to a certain degree, and you will see that. Cut and dry. If you just practice with the pace of the race, pace of the horse. That program gets almost to be an obsession because you see things you would not believe. You can run that thing through on your computer, and you will see things there that will open your eyes about horse racing that you never envisioned was true before. What can your horse do against what pace? What can will it always fail to do against another? If any of you who still think, yeah, but Pereira did that, if you take all of those races, and we did this at one seminar down in Washington, we took about six of Pereira's races, and we did just this. And the fellow who was the big yeah but doubter, he looked at it and he had the decency, honestly, to say, "Geez, I never saw him that way." And he saw precisely what Pereira was doing.
It wasn't Irish or.
That was one of them, Irish or.
The one that got
yes was another one.
We
went through a whole batch of them. Incredible mastery of putting a horse in where it could run.
And we couldn't find monkey juice in the
wait first.
Amazing, but he's just always doing, whether he probably doesn't use a computer, he probably doesn't. This is not what he does, he just senses it. You've got it on a computer. All right. Sticking to the basic essentials is, now you're saying to yourself, all right, now we know what the horse does. Yeah, but this was on a 32 daily variant, another one was on a 10, another one was on a 12. The first problem that everybody thinks about, why? Because it's there, is how do I adjust for a daily variant? Before we go into a daily variant, track to track variant, distance variant, any guys want to chime up here? That's not a monologue. And then if you want to ask questions, same one. Yes, sir.
Can I ask Mike?
He'd love to have you ask him.
Yeah, a question about the inner track that I was up in the wintertime.
What is the question?
What I'd like to know is, does he use any kind of variance in that kind of weather condition?
We're going to, excuse me, it's a short answer and the long answer. The long answer, tomorrow, we're going to have an entire panel discussion devoted solely to adjustments and to making variants, which I will be moderating.
Thank you.
But the short answer is that you need to very carefully monitor aqueduct inner in the wintertime. There's good news and there's bad news. The bad news is that, as you know, if you play it, The fractures from one race to another, one race to the next race of a horse, can vary from 2 to 3 seconds. That's the bad news. The good news is, if properly adjusted and a carefully kept model, is that it's highly profitable.
So properly adjusted is the answer.
Yeah, okay.
The answer to your question is generic. When that one's on, this one seems to be off.
What causes that? There, that's what it is. It only works on one at a time, right?
No,
I
think you
have to leave them
all on. All along. Everybody's on. Everybody's live. Yeah. Watch your language, guys. I want you to, if you're going to write any notes down, make one note, because we do have this problem, people. I want you to think like Gertrude Stein. A variant is a variant is a variant is a variant. There is no such thing as a track-to-track variant, a distance variant, a daily variant. They even have variants for post-position bias, jockey variants, trainer variants. Any variant you can think of is a variant. All it is to equalize the performance of one animal, usually by distance and by surface, with that of another who ran on a different, at a different distance and or surface. And by surface I mean fast track, slow track, medium track, inner track, outer track, turf track, dirt track, Santa Anita aqueduct, another track, whatever. A distance adjustment is merely a variant equalizer to adjust the two distances so that one horse who ran on a shorter distance will not show his obvious advantage over a horse who ran a long distance. So there's only one variant. To solve the variant problem, those in the conventional handicapping use what they call ticks. Ticks to me are something that I take off my dogs. But a tick is, I think, one of those little fifths of a second. And so they'll look at a race and they'll say, well, this day was about 2 ticks slower than that day, so we'll give this one 2 ticks to make up for it. That's fine, but it is not precise, and when precision is so easy, why not use it? A variant, or any other figure we use other than actual fractional times, we translate into energy. Any compounding of fractional times, any compounding of velocity, we refer to as energy. Not necessarily because it is energy, but because it distinguishes velocity from a compounding of velocity. To determine a variant of any kind, we take the velocity of the race without reference to beaten lengths. The pace of the race are the figures we use to make variants from, except turf to dirt, which we'll go into the reason for that in a moment. Consequently, if the inner dirt, I'm putting the inner dirt symbol there, at aqueduct, if you determine that on a given day, and this is 6 furlongs, or you have determined over an average with your par generator that the second call time was, let us say, what, 46 and 3, is that close? 47?
Yeah, put 47.
Okay, 47 is what, Jimmy? 2640 divided by 47 is?
5617.
The third fraction is what? 53? You've just taken these.
Huh? The fraction there are more like 51 change.
Oh, that's fast?
In the winter.
Okay. 51 and change, 5180. Let's add those two together, 5617 and 5180. That averages what, 57 something? 5399. Yeah, that would be. Yeah, that's what I took that remedial math. Total energy of the aqueduct inner dirt. Now, don't be blankster involved. You don't care what the horse did. See, if you start equalizing the horses, then you don't have to handicap, and that's. You want to know what the pace of the race was. Why? Because as Ray Talbot told us, as he told Dr. Lerner when he nursed him back to health back in the 1912, 42, whatever it was.
46.
He said that the pace of the race is the class of the race. So if you measure the pace of the race, you are getting the best that race has to offer. You're getting the true class of the race, therefore you're getting... Yes, sir?
real question, and that is, what is more important, total energy or separating early versus...
Well, for this purpose, we're using total energy. We're making a variant now.
But early versus sustaining.
Early versus sustained is in handicapping. We're not making a variant. We'll get to that. You're sufficiently advanced that you want to rush.
Okay.
I'm trying to help these people who are still. See, we have a lot of people in this room who are still making variants using beaten lengths. Or am I wrong? Anybody using beaten lengths and making a variant? See, there's a little error, sir.
This may be an advanced question too, but in the ultrascan manual, when you talk about making a variant, what you use is the time of the winner, not the time...
No, that's not for making a variant, that's for getting wind energy.
Yes, I understand that, and then you go on to use those very figures to explain...
Yeah, well, an ultrascan, that's all right, because an ultrascan, as Michael will tell you, the ultrascan internal adjustments are sufficiently advanced, so we're more concerned with wind energy than we are with pace energy.
No. So you're telling me that you make a variant differently if you're using ultrascan or phase 3?
Yep.
Really?
You can, yes. You can do either way of ultrascan. Ultrascan does not matter which way you do it. You can use wind energy. The reason we suggest you use wind energy, that way you only have to make one profile. I'll tell you why it's almost the same in ultrascan, but it's going to confuse some people. In ultrascan, we use the physics value of the beaten length, because we're using two different sets of distances. And that's why they're almost the same. The relationship is identical with the pace of the race. In phase 3, where you're using equal values for beaten lengths, you have a different problem. But it's an internal thing. But in essence, the pace of the race, especially in race, exclusively in phase 3, is your variant maker. So you say that the total energy in the pace of the race that you've averaged, the one that the class level you're going to use, track was 53.99. Let's say we've done the same process for your main track, and it comes to 54.91. You've got a difference there.
Well, let's make it 55.10. Probably closer than 90.
You got a difference there of 2.11. Right? Is that about right?
53?
What do we
do?
Yeah, 1.11. Using that set of numbers, your difference is 1.11. Now, if all your horses are coming from the inner dirt track to the main track, you're not going to make an adjustment. Why? Why adjust them to the main track when you're not taking any contenders off the main track? But if you have a mixed bag, some are coming off the inner dirt and some have their race on the main track, then you are merely giving the positive adjustment into the open adjustment, which is in your computer program. To the open adjustment, on the common or the one that says deceleration to all three fractions, track to track, etc., you give the inner dirt track a 111 to equalize its performance with what it would have been had it been running on the main track, which you have determined, not from some set of tables that somebody sent you that are obsolete and extinct before they're even mailed, but from your own reality, what's actually transpiring at that track now. Don't expect it to be 1.11 next year, or don't even expect it to be 1.11 next Monday.
That is especially true, getting back to the original question, at Aqueduct in the winter, where the changes in weather are so severe in New York, where one day it can be 55 degrees and the very next day have a completely 10 degrees snowing and a frozen track, and from day to day.
January of 81. That was January of 81. I think there was a favorite.
Frozen track.
Well, even this past year, there were wild swings in weather and moisture on the track, and even just looking very simply at the daily racing form variant. So that's why...
Even the daily racing form variant is profitable. Well, you're right.
But we have so much more of an advantage by using these numbers. This is really our strength. And I'll tell you, one handicapper in New York who I really, really respect, it's the fellow to whom Howard made allusion to before, who actually taught Andy Beyer a lot of this. I would stand next to him and pick turf exotic after turf exotic, just killing the turf races in New York. And he
just this past week we were both at Inside Track. He said, how could you possibly, because he said, I will show you how the internal fractions that you get in the racing form are 7/5 of a second, 1 2/5 second off. I said, no, that's not true. We stood there, we went and watched the tape of a race with a stopwatch, and indeed, one race that he showed me was 7/5 of a second off. Because we compound these numbers, we don't just use ticks or we just don't use one time, but we use these compounded numbers for energy. I was able to show him how using those times in the race that we're handicapping against the other horses, it accurately predicted the order of finish 1, 2, 3, 4.
This is the end of the tape.